Vatn Sikopa Tuvista, Pupasan Vedita, Patitram Bhavine Vyobaisudibhyam. Om Ganatmanandasa, Jananjana Salaka, Chaksusimanatan, Jainatasmai Sri Jale Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manavistam, Stapitam, Jainavutale, Sayam Rupagadamayam, Dadati Sapanatikam. Vatn Sikopa Tuvista, Pupasan Vedita, Patitram Bhavine Vyobaisudibhyam. Sukadev Goswami said, after Lord Brahma had thus spoken, Brahma prayed to the Lord. Oops, I already read that chapter. The appearance of Lord Brahma. Now, the Lord Vamandeva is approaching the sacrificial fire of Bali Maharaj, where he's performing the Aswamedha sacrifices. He's approached, and Bali Maharaj is completely enamored by this wonderful, effulgent dwarf Brahmin, little boy. And he said to the boy, Bali Maharaj said to Vamandev, he said, whatever you want, I shall give you. It appears that you have come to beg something from me. Whatever you want in charity, I shall give you. Sukadev Goswami continued, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamandev, heard Bali Maharaj speaking in this pleasing way, he was very satisfied. For Bali Maharaj had spoken in terms of religious principles. Thus the Lord began to praise him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O King, you are indeed exalted because your present advisors are the Brahmins, who are descendants of Bhrigu, and because your instructor for your future life is your grandfather, the peaceful and venerable Prahlad Maharaj. Your statements are very true, and they completely agree with religious etiquette. They are in keeping with the behavior of your family and they enhance your reputation. So Vamandev is speaking truthfully. But he wants something from Bali Maharaj. What is the something that he wants? He wants what he can take. And what can he take? Everything. So he's speaking very, very sweetly in reply to Bali Maharaj's sweet speech. You're exalted. Yes, why? Because you're being advised by exalted persons, he says. Because if one is advised by low-class people with horrible character, no exaltation, then one, by taking that advice, one will become like that. One will become degraded. But if on the other hand, is taking advice from exalted persons, then one becomes similarly exalted. And not only was Bali Maharaj taking advice from exalted Brahmins, descendants of Bhrigu Muni, but also from his most exalted grandfather named Prahlad Maharaj, who was an exalted devotee, most exalted Mahajana devotee. And your statements are religious, and not only that, you are keeping, by following religion, you are keeping in line with the behavior of your family and they enhance your reputation. Very, very sweet speech. What wonderful family members was Bali Maharaj party with? The wonderful family members such as Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha. And very soon, Vamadeva is going to speak very sweetly about these exalted personalities. Of course they were exalted personalities. They put up such a great fight against Lord Vishnu. So that is one way of saying that they're so exalted. They were able to actually challenge Lord Vishnu and fight with him. So how exalted they are. But then again, if they're fighting with Lord Vishnu, are they actually exalted? But then again, they're coming from the spiritual world ultimately, so actually they were exalted. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Prahlad Maharaj is a vivid example of a pure devotee. Someone might argue that since Prahlad Maharaj, even though very old, was attached to his family and specifically to his grandson, Bali Maharaj, how could he be an ideal example? Therefore, this verse uses the word prashantaha. A devotee is always sober. He is never disturbed by any conditions. Even if a devotee remains in grihastha life, he does not renounce material possessions. He should still be understood to be prashanta, sober, because of his pure devotion to the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore said, Kiba vipra kiba nyasi sudra kene nai ye krishna tattva veta se guru hai. Whether one is a brahmana, a sannyasi, or a sudra, regardless of what he is, he can become a spiritual master if he knows the science of Krishna. If one, in other words, if it's a devotee, this is the qualification for being a guru. Because then, as Prabhupada is explaining in his purport, regardless of the externals of his situation, he is soberly viewing them. Soberly means seeing things as they are, seeing things therefore in relationship with Krishna. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, although a householder, was yet exalted and fully qualified to advise his grandson Bali Maharaj. Thus, Prahlad Maharaj is guru in all circumstances. Here, his lordship Vamanadeva also teaches sannyasis and brahmacharis that one should not ask more than necessary. He wanted only 3 paces of land. Vamadeva only wanted 3 paces of land, although Bali Maharaj wanted to give him anything he wanted. Yeah, in the last verse of the last chapter, Bali Maharaj said, whatever you want, I'll give you. You want land, you want gold, palatable food and drink, prosperous villages, whatever you want, wife, anything you want, I'll give you. Gold, anything. So there's a lesson here for those who are begging, who subsist by begging on the charity of others, is that they should not take more than they need for themselves. Now, Vamanadeva can continue with his very sweet speech. He wants something from him. He wants him to, because he said, I'll give you whatever you want, and he's going to ask for something incredible. He's going to ask for something very simple, but he's going to take something incredible. And he wants Bali Maharaj to give him all of that. So therefore he says, I know that even until now, no one taking birth in your family has been poor-minded or miserly. No one has refused to give charity to brahmanas, nor after promising to give charity, has anyone failed to fulfill his promise. O King Bali, never in your dynasty has the low-minded king been born, who upon being requested has refused charity to brahmanas in holy places or a fight to kshatriyas on a battlefield. And your dynasty is even more glorious due to the presence of Prahlad Maharaj, who is like the beautiful moon in the sky. It was in your dynasty that Hiranyaksha was born. Carrying only his own club, he wandered the globe alone, without assistance to conquer all directions, and no hero he met could rival him. Hiranyaksha, who is the great-grandfather of Bali Maharaj, was so powerful. When delivering the earth from the Garbhodaka sea, Lord Vishnu in his incarnation as a boar killed Hiranyaksha, who had appeared before him. The fight was severe, and the Lord killed Hiranyaksha with great difficulty. Later, as the Lord thought about the uncommon prowess of Hiranyaksha, he felt himself victorious indeed. So how wonderful was your relative Hiranyaksha! He was such a powerful demon that he even gave a good fight to the Lord. Such a glorious relative you have. You should be so proud of him to be born in such a family. When Hiranyakashipu heard the news of his brothers being killed, with great anger he went to the residence of Vishnu, the killer of his brother, wanting to kill Lord Vishnu. So how powerful this demon was. Seeing Hiranyakashipu coming forward, bearing a trident in his hand like personified death, Lord Vishnu, the best of all mystics and the knower of the progress of time, thought as follows. Wherever I go, Hiranyakashipu will follow me as death follows all living entities. Therefore, it is better for me to enter the core of his heart. For then, because of his power to see only externally, he will not see me. Lord Vamandev continued, O king of the demons, after Lord Vishnu made this decision, he entered the body of his enemy Hiranyakashipu, who was running after him with great force. In a subtle body, inconceivable to Hiranyakashipu, Lord Vishnu, who was in great anxiety, entered Hiranyakashipu's nostril along with his breath. Prabhupada's purport here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is already in the core of everyone's heart. Ishvara Savabhutanam Riddhishe Arjuna Tishtiti. Logically, therefore, it was not at all difficult for Lord Vishnu to enter Hiranyakashipu's body. The word vivigna cheta, very anxious, is significant because he's saying that the Lord, he was so much anxious, afraid, in great anxiety, he entered Hiranyakashipu, his heart through his nostril. How is that? The Lord was in so much anxiety? Was he afraid of the anger of Hiranyakashipu? Was that the cause of his anxiety? Prabhupada continues, it is not that Lord Vishnu was afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Rather, because of compassion, Lord Vishnu was in anxiety about how to act for his welfare. So this is just the opposite of how a devotee thinks, than to how a demon thinks. Because a demon will say, boy, this is so wonderful. My great-great-grandfather was so powerful, he could even cause anxiety to Lord Vishnu, to God. And the devotee, on the other hand, tries to remove the anxiety of the Lord. In one of Prabhupada's purports, he explains that Krishna is in anxiety about what? About the fallen living entities. And he wants to show the conditioned soul's mercy in so many ways. So he makes a system so that they can go back to Godhead. And he explains that system through the different holy books, the Shastras. So that's how he shows his mercy. And he empowers devotees, great souls, to spread his words. He empowers them with his Kripa Shakti, his own mercy. In addition, he himself comes to this world in different incarnations, like he's come as Vamandev, to show pastimes that attract the minds of living entities. So many living entities become attracted, and then we can hear about it. So the devotees, Prabhupada explains, want to remove the anxiety that Lord Vishnu feels. How? By reclaiming, taking his mission seriously and reclaiming the conditioned souls. And such devotees who preach, who are merciful, who are kind to conditioned souls, they very quickly achieve Krishna's mercy. He reciprocates. So Vamandev continued speaking. Because Lord Vishnu entered the heart of Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu was rushing towards Lord Vishnu to kill him. He was going towards Lord Vishnu's abode to kill him because Lord Vishnu had killed his brother Hiranyaksha. So upon seeing that the residence of Lord Vishnu was vacant, Hiranyakashipu began searching for Lord Vishnu everywhere, angry at not seeing him. Hiranyakashipu screamed loudly and searched the entire universe, including the surface of the earth, the higher planetary systems, all directions and all the caves and oceans. But Hiranyakashipu, the greatest hero, did not see Vishnu anywhere. Unable to see him, Hiranyakashipu said, "I have searched the entire universe, but I could not find Vishnu who has killed my brother. Therefore, he must certainly have gone to that place from which no one returns." In other words, he must now be dead. So Hiranyakashipu was such an atheist, demon, asura, that he thought that the Lord was dead. And obviously this is foolish, because we understand from the Bhagavad Gita that the soul, the individual, tiny, insignificant soul, can never die. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. The soul does not die when the body dies. So if the soul does not die, then how can the Lord die? So Hiranyakashipu was clearly an atheist. Hiranyakashipu's anger against Lord Vishnu persisted. He was so powerful, and he was so determined and so exemplary in maintaining his anger that he was able to keep his anger, maintain it, and have it persist until his death. Of course, we know how Hiranyakashipu died. Till his death, being ripped apart by the claws of the Lord, as Lord Nrisimhadev. Other people in the bodily concept of life maintain anger only because of false ego and the great influence of ignorance, Prabhupada's purport. Generally speaking, even though the conditioned soul is angry, his anger is not perpetual, but temporary. It is due to the influence of ignorance. Hiranyakashipu, however, maintained his enmity and his anger against Lord Vishnu until the point of death. He never forgot his vengeful attitude towards Vishnu for having killed his brother, Hiranyaksha. Others in the bodily concept of life are angry at their enemies, but not at Lord Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu, however, was everlastingly angry. He was angry not only because of false prestige, but also because of continuous enmity towards Vishnu. So this is the quality of the great grandfather of Bali Maharaj, that he was no ordinary demon. He was a great, great, great demon. So Vamandev continues his very sweet speech. "Your father Virochana, the son of Maharaj Prahlad, was very affectionate towards Brahmins. Although he knew very well that it was the demigods who had come to him in the dress of a Brahmanas, at their request he delivered to them the duration of his life." So that's honor. Such honor. The Kshatriyas, when they would give charity, like Karna, when he at a particular time of the day he would give charity, and whoever asked anything from him, he would give it to him. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, Indra came because he thought that Karna would be able to kill his dear son Arjuna, and he came in disguise of a Brahmin, and he begged from him in that particular time, and Karna said, "Whatever you want, I'll give you." And he said, "I want the armor and your earrings, Kavacha and Kundala, that you were born with, and this will make you weaker." And he said, "Okay, you have begged me from this." Such integrity. So he took out his knife, and he cut off the earrings and the armor. "You asked for this, here it is." Even Jarasandha, an atheist, when Krishna and Bhim and Arjun came to beg from him, dressed as brahmanas, he said, "Whatever you want, I'll give you, even my head." And they said, "We don't want your head." "Well, what do you want?" "We want to fight with you." "Oh, that I'll give you very easily. You want to fight? Okay." So Bhima fought with Jarasandha at that time. So very charitable and strong. Once having fixed their mind on something, the nature of these Kshatriyas, they're so determined. So So the demigods came to Virochana. We want to, in the form of Brahmins, we want to beg something from you. What? Your life, the duration of your life. Okay, you want that? Take it. You're so afraid of me that you want to end my life. Okay, take it. Text 15. Lord Vamadeva continued. You have already observed the principles followed by great personalities who are householder brahmanas, by your forefathers, and by great heroes who are extremely famous for their exalted activities. O King of the Daityas, from your majesty, who come from such a noble family and who are able to give charity munificently, I ask only 3 paces of land to the measurement of my steps. So after saying your people and your family always give whatever they ask, they give. They are such charitable personalities. Well, what do you want then? All I want is 3 paces of land. And my steps, I'm a dwarf. So my steps, I'm not like a lean fellow, tall and lean, that I could take huge steps, strides. I'm a dwarf. Just give me 3 paces of land by my steps. So although he's a dwarf, he's not an ordinary dwarf, so his steps are going to be to prove extremely large. O King, controller of the entire universe, although you are very munificent and are able to give me as much land as I want, I do not want anything from you that is unnecessary. If a learned brahmana takes charity from others only according to his needs, he does not become entangled in sinful activities. Prabhupada's purport. A brahmana or sannyasi is qualified to ask charity from others. But if he takes more than necessary, he is punishable. No one can use more of the Supreme Lord's property than necessary. Lord Vamanadev indirectly indicated to Bali Maharaj that he was occupying more land than he needed. In the material world, all distresses are due to extravagance. One acquires money extravagantly and also spends it extravagantly. Such activities are sinful. All property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all living beings who are sons of the Supreme Lord have the right to use the Supreme Father's property. But one cannot take more than necessary. This principle should especially be followed by Brahmins and sannyasis who live at the cost of others. Thus, Vamanadev was an ideal beggar, for he asked only 3 paces of land. Of course, there is a difference between his footsteps and those of an ordinary human being. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his inconceivable prowess, can occupy the entire universe, including the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems, by the unlimited measurement of his footsteps. So when Bali Maharaj said to Vamadeva, whatever you want, I'll give you. And he said, all I want is 3 paces of land by my own steps, little legs. Bali Maharaj looked at him and said, O son of a brahmana, your instructions are as good as those of a learned and elderly person. You're speaking so wisely. Nonetheless, you are a boy, and your intelligence is insufficient. Thus, you are not very prudent in regard to your self-interest. You have to take care of yourself. I could give you so much. In the next verse he explains this, Bali Maharaj does. I'm able to give you an entire island because I'm the proprietor of the 3 divisions of the universe. You have come to take something from me, and you have pleased me by your sweet words. But you are asking only 3 paces of land? Therefore, you are not very intelligent. Before we go on, we'll read the purport to 18. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being full in himself, has nothing to want for his self-interest. Lord Vamanadeva, therefore, had not gone to Pali Maharaj for his own self-interest. Of course, everything ultimately belongs to the Lord anyway. What is the need for him to beg from another? As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Savalokamaheshwaram, the Lord is the proprietor of all planets in both the material and spiritual worlds. Why should he be in want of land? Bali Maharaj rightly said that Lord Vamandev was not at all prudent in regard to his own personal interest. Lord Vamandev had approached Bali not for his personal welfare, but for the welfare of his devotees. Devotees sacrifice all personal interest to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And similarly, the Supreme Lord, although having no personal interest, can do anything for the interests of his devotees. One who is full in himself has no personal interest. So who was Bali Maharaj doing this, or Vamanadev doing this for? Doing it for the... To whom? Who was he pleasing? Who was he reciprocating with? Aditi. Yes. And Aditi wanted the kingdom of heaven, which the demons were occupying, headed by Bali Maharaj. She wanted it back for her sons. So Krishna was and Vamandev was reciprocating with her desire at this point. So he said, why are you being so foolish? Bali Maharaj is saying, I can give you so much and you only want 3 paces of land? He continues, oh small boy, one who approaches me to beg something should not have to ask anything more anywhere. Therefore, if you wish, you may ask for me as much land as will suffice to maintain you according to your needs. What can you do with 3 spaces of land? You cannot grow anything. You cannot live any on it. You cannot give it to another. It has no value practically. Take more. I possess the universe. Take more. Take more. And Lord Vamandev replied in a very wise way, and even though he was preparing to cheat Bali Maharaj, his words still are very important. He said, oh my dear king, even the entirety of whatever there may be within the 3 worlds to satisfy one's senses cannot satisfy a person whose senses are uncontrolled. We'll read the last third of Prabhupada's purport. Here Lord Vamandev, as an ideal brahmachari, refuses Bali Maharaj's offer to give him anything he might want. He says that without contentment, one could not be happy even if he possesses the property of the entire world or the entire universe. In human society, therefore, the Brahminical culture, Kshatriya culture, and Vaishya culture must be maintained, and people must be taught how to be satisfied with only what they need. Just the opposite of today's civilization, where people are taught not to be satisfied with what they have, and not to be satisfied with only what they need, but they're taught to be dissatisfied with whatever they have. Specifically, to consume more, to keep the economy going, to listen to the advertising, be completely dissatisfied with the current status of your possessions, get more, buy more, spend more. If you don't have money, don't worry, borrow money and spend it. And don't worry, you can pay it back later. Don't worry, we'll charge you 18% interest. But don't worry, spend, 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 buy, buy, buy. And by the more you spend, the more you buy, the more, they say, satisfied. But Vamanadev says, the more dissatisfied you become. Because none of those things will cause satisfaction to the heart. Because the desires of the living entity are born of which of the modes of material nature? According to the Bhagavad Gita. Passion. And the result of passion is more and more and more desires and distress The result of passion is distress, not satisfaction. The result of ignorance is deeper ignorance. The result of goodness, actions and goodness, is satisfaction. Because basically goodness means self-satisfied. You know that experience every once in a while, it rolls through us in a day or every few days. There's a feeling of self-satisfaction and you can sit back and feel satisfied. And then quickly the mode of passion will come, or probably when that happens, after that quick visit of the mode of goodness, you begin to get drowsy and go to sleep. So self-satisfied, I don't have to do anything. So therefore, might as well take best advantage of the moment and take some rest, because my eyelids are getting heavy anyway. Because the modes and material aids are always struggling against each other, one pushing the other like that. But goodness actually causes satisfaction. And everyone, every person, even if they may be predominated by passion and ignorance, goodness will visit sometimes, and then that feeling of satisfaction comes to the heart. So in human society, therefore, Prabhupada explains, the Brahminical culture, Kshatriya culture, and Vaishya culture must be maintained, and people must be taught how to be satisfied with only what they need. What would happen in modern civilization if people were satisfied with only what they need? The whole civilization would collapse. There would be no gallerias, there would be no this, there would be no big shopping malls. There would be not a new make of car every year. I only have a year 2001 car, and now it's 2002. How could I be satisfied with that? And the hairstyles are changing, and this is all, everything's always changing. Changing, Prabhupada would explain, it means that it's rascaldom. Because it's not by changing that it will change to something that will be more satisfying. The change of style of dress, change of watch, change of shoes, change of cars, change of this, change of that, change of everything, changing of just continuous change, which means that it's that there's no knowledge. What makes us think that the next change is going to bring us any more satisfaction than the last change? So that's a symptom of ignorance. In modern civilization, there is no such education. Everyone tries to possess more and more, and everyone is dissatisfied and unhappy. And no one thinks that, puts the two together, that I want more and more and more, and I'm becoming more and more dissatisfied. So maybe it's wanting more and more that's making me dissatisfied. Rather, people think that the reason I'm not happy, the reason I'm not satisfied, is because I don't have those things that I want. Because he has it. This person has it, or this country has it. So envy enters the heart. More and more dissatisfaction. Envy, enmity, fighting. Horrible. The Krishna Consciousness Movement is therefore establishing various farms, especially in America, to show how to be happy and content with minimum necessities of life and to save time for self-realization, which one can very easily achieve by chanting the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this was one of Prabhupada's great hopes. Because it's one thing to preach very strongly and loudly and convincedly how modern civilization is corrupt, how it's rascaldom, how it's foolish, how it's ignorant. It's not necessary. But then people will say, well, how do you live? You show us something better. And then what do we say? Prabhupada wanted to say, just look at these farms, simple agrarian life. You don't have to travel an hour to get to work every day, or 2 hours in a car, in a dangerous car. Get to work, travel an hour to get back. No. If you choose to live simply, you can live, subsist just on on what you can grow, basically. He wanted this to be demonstrated. You can live, feed yourself just on what you grow, and on the milk of a cow, the grains and the vegetables, and the milk of the cow, and live very, very, very happily in a simple environment. Peacefully. Simple living. But not only simple living, also high thinking. High thinking means thinking of spiritual subject matters, chanting Hare Krishna, and becoming self-realized. So this was one of Prabhupada's great hopes. At one time he said that this was 50% of his mission, the establishment of these rural communities that were self-sufficient. So Vamadeva continued speaking about how someone whose senses were uncontrolled could not be satisfied. He said, if I were not satisfied with 3 paces of land, then I surely would not be satisfied even with possessing one of the 7 islands consisting of 9 varshas. Even if I possessed 1 island, I would hope to get others. Especially if you saw that someone else had 2 islands. Or even 1, and his island might have something that your island didn't have. Vamana continued, we have heard that although powerful kings like Maharaj Prithu and Maharaj Gaya achieved proprietorship over the 7 dvipas, they could not achieve satisfaction or find the end of their ambitions. One should be satisfied with whatever he achieves by his previous destiny, for discontent can never bring happiness. This philosophy is just not accepted, what to speak of, taught, propagated, to be satisfied with what you have. Discontent never brings happiness. Discontent comes with ungratefulness. If one isn't grateful to Krishna for what one has, then whatever one has, one cannot be satisfied. So it's the contentment that brings the satisfaction, not the externals. Discontent can never bring happiness. A person who is not self-controlled will not be happy even with possessing the 3 worlds. So very powerful philosophy spoken. And the example was, the best example of this was the grandfather of Bali Maharaj, Hiranyakashipu. Although he possessed everything, the whole universe, still he was dissatisfied and remained drunk and angry. He was drunk with power and liquor, and was very angry all the time because of his dissatisfaction. So angry he couldn't even tolerate. He couldn't even tolerate that Prahlad Maharaj, his young boy, was not fully submissive to him and wouldn't adopt his demonic mentality. He could not tolerate that. Prabhupada's purport. This will be possibly the last one we'll read. If happiness is the ultimate goal of life, one must be satisfied with the position in which he is placed by providence. This instruction is also given by Prahlad Maharaj. Sukam indriyakam daitya deya yogena dehinam savatra labhate daivan yata dukam ayatnataha. My dear friends born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life according to one's past fruit of activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress. Bhagavatam 7.6.3. This philosophy is perfect in regarding to obtaining happiness. Real happiness is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Sukham matyantikam yattad Budigrayam Atendriyam Vettiyatra Nachayvayam Stitas Chalati Tatvataha. In the spiritually joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. One has to perceive happiness by the super senses. The super senses are not the senses of the material elements. Every one of us is a spiritual being, aham brahmasmi, and every one of us is an individual person. Our senses are now covered by material elements, and because of ignorance, we consider the material senses that cover us to be our real senses. The senses basically means the body. The real senses, however, are within the material covering. That means we have a spiritual body with spiritual senses. And that's actually us. Dehenosmin yata dehe. Within the covering of the material elements of the spiritual senses. Sarvapadiva niyamuktam tatparatvena niyamalam. When the spiritual senses are uncovered, by these senses we can be happy. Those senses are meant for pleasing Krishna. Prabhupada explains that. Satisfaction of the spiritual senses is thus described. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. When the senses are engaged in devotional service to Rishikesh, then the senses are completely satisfied. Without this superior knowledge of sense gratification, one may try to satisfy his material senses, but happiness will never be possible. There's a difference between happiness and sense enjoyment. The contemporary materialists equate the two. Happiness means sense enjoyment. That's how people think. But actually completely different. One may enjoy one's senses and combine the senses with the sense objects but achieve no happiness whatsoever. This happens all the time. So to satisfy, one may try to satisfy his material senses, but happiness will never be possible. One may increase his ambition for sense gratification and even achieve what he desires for the gratification of his senses, but because this is on the material platform, he will never achieve satisfaction and contentment. According to Brahminical culture, one should be content with whatever he obtains without special endeavor and should cultivate spiritual consciousness. Then he will be happy. The purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to spread this understanding. People who do not have scientific spiritual knowledge mistakenly think that the members of this Krishna consciousness movement are escapists trying to avoid material activities. In fact, however, we are engaged in real activities for obtaining the ultimate happiness in life. If one is not trained to satisfy the spiritual senses and continues in material sense gratification, he would never obtain happiness that is eternal and blissful. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.1 therefore recommends Tapo Dibyam Putrakayena Satvam Sudyed Yajman Brahmasokyam Tvanantam. One may practice austerity so that in his existential position, so that his existential position will be purified and he will achieve unlimited blissful life. We'll just read the last three verses with no purports before the pastime continues. Material existence causes discontent in regard to fulfilling one's lusty desires and achieving more and more money. This is the cause for the continuation of material life, which is full of repeated birth and death. But one who is satisfied by that which is obtained by destiny is fit for liberation from this material existence. A Brahman who is satisfied with whatever is providentially obtained is increasingly enlightened with spiritual power. But the spiritual potency of a dissatisfied Brahman decreases as fire diminishes in potency when water is sprinkled upon it. Therefore, O King, from you, the best of those who give charity, I ask only three paces of land. By such a gift, I shall be very pleased, for the way of happiness is to be fully satisfied to receive that which is absolutely needed. And I only need, by the measurement of my own steps, three paces of land. 3 steps of land only. Very innocent. Very good preaching. Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Vamana Deva ki jai.